Today we are very happy to welcome Edo Mahendra, who is a PhD student here at Oxford Department of International Development with IMI as well. Edo was involved in a DEMIC project, so he worked with Andreas, Matthias and all the team about the drivers of migration, and today he will present a paper based approximately about the presentation that he gave in the DEMIC conference last time. So the floor is yours. You have approximately half an hour, and we have approximately 25 minutes, 20 minutes for discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Yasser. Thank you very much to invite me in this IMI weekly seminar. On this very nice occasion, I will share with you one of the chapters in my different thesis. Basically, the big topic of this presentation is the role, what is the role of social policy on migration? The title, this is a short title, Reverse Reconnectment. Maybe some of you have already heard about welfare magnet before. Maybe some of you haven't, so we will discuss it. So I try to search in Google, just put welfare immigration cartoon, something like that. And these are some of the images that pop up on my computer, my screen. Okay, let's start with the top, the one in the top left corner. Say you have this exit and then welfare. So like, yes, I exit my current location because I want to go to this destination called welfare. So it's like, okay, welfare migrants, Google image is like that, welfare. And then there is also a cartoon there, and it's, I don't know, I think it's made in the US, about the US. That's the border, and then those the they're supposedly illegal immigrants, because, but you can see there are some styles there, free education, free healthcare. Those are, education, healthcare are those components within the welfare. Interesting. And they hear, well, it's aliens, so aliens will be coming from Mars and to Earth and say, okay, we're economic refugees. So they stayed, explicitly we're economic refugees, but actually the real objective is to get welfare. So those kind of things also pop up. So. And finally, of course, this is not related at all with migration, but this is like a typical a stereotype of people who don't want to work. Yeah, job applicants want to work. It looks really formal and serious. And the cool guy here is basically welfare seekers. Of course, if you apply the same logic, saying that, okay, the migrants actually go to these developed countries looking for welfare, then basically you are implicitly also associate them with this lazy, happy-go-lucky, and we just want to get the welfare. So this is some anecdotal images from people who just search for welfare. So these kind of things, where people try to migrate to better places, better countries, that are based, that the main motivation is to get welfare. Those in the literature is often called welfare magnet, it's like a magnet. So countries that have generous welfare state, generous welfare policy, then they tend to attract migrants. Migrants want to come, it acts like a magnet. So the issue here is that, so developing countries or less developed countries, people from these kind of countries, they go to developed countries. Not only because of the wage gap, income gap, but also because of the gap in welfare. Of course, in the traditional migration literature, in the determinants migration literature, the much of the focus are in these three at the macro level, of course, micro as well. So in the neoclassical perspective of migration theory, it says, okay, economic development matters. If you have a development gap, then of course people want to move to countries where they are more developed and meaning more opportunities. And the effect is of course ambiguous, as we know, because according to the capability approach, actually more development creates to more migration. And then of course there are other two strands of inequality. This is kind of the also traditional migration determinant where basically all is talking about the gaps between country inequalities, of course the income gap between normally we say the developing less developed and developed countries. Within country inequality of course is the between groups, yeah, the income gap between individuals, citizens in the country. So normally use this Gini coefficient or something to measure the country. So much of the focus in migration determinants look into this kind of structural factors. What is also missing is the issue of the impact of policies from the sending countries perspective, the developing countries perspective. Even in the literature of welfare management, the things that are being discussed are two. The first one is, of course, the impact of this welfare program, whether there exists welfare market, whether there exists welfare migrants or not. And the evidence is mixed. The second is the impact of migrants on the welfare state of the world. So these two strands of research kept in the welfare policy, welfare state, and migration literature is basically really biased on the developed countries perspective. So there's a really lacking of discussions on the effects of developing countries policies on migration. So there's a lack of research on that. Now, my focus is on, because we're talking about social policy, which is also the topic of the IMA seminars. Let's go to the social policy literature about what we mean with social policies. Basically, social policies, to put it really generally, are the policies that are used to tackle these five evil giants: to reduce poverty, to improve education, to alleviate poor housing, to decrease unemployment, and of course to improve health. Now, in this paper, actually I have two papers, but for this I only present one, the macro one. I focus on the three components of social policy. It's also part of, in the developed country welfare state. But the dimension of social policy, I choose to focus on education, health, and social protection. That's those are the fields, the components of social policy that I discussed. Now, let's see these gaps. The migration determinants love to talk about gaps. All these gaps really trigger migration. It's like so this is the traditional GDP per capita. It's huge gap between the developing and the developed countries. And of course, the GDP growth gap is really small, low, because of the catch-up, the convergence between developing and developed countries. And this increase, of course, it's low, because now the developing countries, of course, grow much more higher. But if you look into the social policy component, actually there is also a huge gap here. So why is nobody talking about the effect of social policy gap and the effect on migration? Everybody's talking about this income gap, but not about this gap. Why? Well, my guess is because the theory, contemporary magazine theories talk about income gaps, about income maximization. This is based on income maximization, but not on risk minimization. What is really the field, how social policy affects migration is through risk minimization. So what is risk minimization is, so what I talk about risk minimization is like, maybe some of you people not only talk about, people when they decide to migrate, they don't only see whether they can maximize their income in some better places, but they also see whether they can really reduce the risk profile. So one of migration theories in New Economics of Labor Migration states that migration is actually part of a strategy to minimize the risk through remittances. With social policy, actually, if there exist all these social policies, better education, more schools, better health facilities, and the existence of social protection, unemployment benefits, those kind of things, cash transfers, actually, it reduces the risk of income shocks. So if you use that kind of logic, then actually, okay, so if the risk is minimized, if the risk profile is minimized of these potential migrants, then it should reduce the incentives for them to migrate. So that's the link between the social policy and risk minimization. Now, if we break down the components of social policy, of course, we see gap again, especially in social protection. Of course, in poor countries, education is also high because they, most of these countries subsidize the primary education, not really the secondary or higher education. But yeah, of course, the social protection in developed countries are really high because of the lots of unemployment benefits, pensions that are managed and sourced by the state. So if we say all the time, okay, income gaps, wage gaps are the trigger, the determinants of migration, then why can't social policy also be a pull factor? That trigger migration. Now, we have this welfare magnets typology actually. So this is the right arrow, the A, so this is the right hand side, on the left, right is the sending country. So we have developing countries in this case, and there are multiple potential destination countries migrants can choose. Welfare magnet, of course, if the effect of one country, of one developed destination countries on the sending country. What I'm focusing on, okay, multilateral welfare magnet is the effect of others, because people compare destinations. And what I focus on is the reverse welfare magnet that acts like a buffer. Because if you use the risk minimization argument, then if the welfare condition in developing countries are comprehensive and intensive, then actually it should reduce the incentive for them to migrate. Now, what are the mechanisms of the effect of social policy? First one is through risk diversification. Let us start with disaggregating two effects from social policy. So if you have social policy in the case of in-kind transfers or cash transfers, then you will have basically two effects, income effect and substitution effect. Now, in order for those social policy instruments to have a reverse welfare magnet effect, then they have to have two conditions in this case. So the first one is the impact, the income effect has to be substantial. So, of course, and for instance, if you're poor and then you receive cash transfers, then if it is really small compared to your need, then it is not really significant to change your behavior, to change your risk profile. And the second is, and this is even more, so this is a, like this necessary condition is the first one. And the second one, the greater substitution effect is like the sufficient condition for them to migrate. So if you have, let's do some thought experiment. So assume that I'm a poor person and then I receive tax transfers from the government, and then if the cash transfers come with no conditions, so if it is an unconditional cash transfer, so there are no conditions attached, then it's likely that the income effect is greater because I can use the additional extra cash that I have to finance my migration. Of course, you can choose whether to use it to invest or something. But for the poor, maybe if they have large migration situation, they use it to finance their migration. However, just another example, using the same cash transfers, but with conditions, for instance, conditions that I have to send my children to school, or with conditions that I have to work, maybe 20 hours per week, those kind of things, then actually the substitution effect is larger, because I have to stay larger than income. So if both effects are present, then it creates a disincentive to migrate. Because okay, now this extra cash in either it is implicit or explicit make me okay, I don't need to migrate anymore. I don't need to send my family members for migration because my risk profile has been reduced. But if it is not, then actually there is no binding of this social force. The second mechanism is the relative redistribution. So the y-axis is the, anyway, so this is based on the aspiration capability approach in migration. So in aspiration capability approach, you have this aspiration and capability. In order for someone to have migration, to migrate, then at first you have to have the aspiration. And then, of course, aspiration is not enough because you need to be capable to migrate. So these two kind of things really play a role in migration decision. Now, so the theory says that with increasing capability, actually the aspiration to migrate is higher. However, it is not linear. So if someone is really capable, is having like passing the threshold of this capability, then actually their migration aspiration would be lower. Because once you are capable enough to open your business, for instance, if you're relatively well off compared to the other groups in your country, for instance, in your region, then if you are already passing this threshold, then actually an additional income, an additional capability actually reduces the risk, the need for you to migrate, because you can open your own business, because you can buy your own lands to farm instead of working as a labor farmer, then okay, so you land owner and then you pay, so then you stay. So, but only once you can be an investor, so to say, you have something. So, and this micro decision is also consistent with the migration transition theory. So in the migration at the macro, so in migration transition theory, so you have this kind of inverted U relationship between economic development and emigration. So basically at the macro level, countries that have higher level of, so as countries pass some threshold of economic development level, then the level of immigration actually go down. And then they become like immigration countries. So that explains the diminishing marginal aspiration to migrate as the capability increases and passes certain threshold. Now, so if we relate economic capability with level of economic development, then it should come as at the same direction. So basically, if economic development, if the economy of country grows, develops, then the individual capability should also increase, right? And there is also, but so where is this social policy effect comes in? So it comes from the redistribution effect of social policy, because social policy most of it, in general, doesn't really affect the income. So basically, it's more like transfers. Of course, there are some human capital effects in the long run: education, better education, better health. But actually, the effect is basically really transferring some amount of wealth from those who are the haves, well off, to the last one, the worse off in the society. So basically, if the economy develops, and then with some transfers income, with some social policy that really reduces the feeling of deprivation of some groups compared to others, then it reduces the aspiration, migration aspiration, for any level of economic development. So this W, this shaded area, is the reverse of magnetic effect at the beginning. So through this risk diversification and relative distribution mechanisms, those two mechanisms that explain the presence of reverse work. So I try to test this hypothesis empirically at the macro level using cross-country data from 1985-2010, spatial data, and I only focus on south-north migration, so only migration from developing countries and to developed countries. First, I use a graphic model and several control variables. So what's the? There are some issues, of course, in doing this kind of analysis. The first one is reverse causality, because social policy, of course, affects migration, but at the same time, migration flow can also affect social policy. We know that brain drain is more prevalent in migration flow from developing countries to developed countries. So of course, this means that higher brain drain means potentially lower tax income for the government that is eventually used for social policy. So there is a reverse causality issue here. Secondly, there is also issues of some unknown factors that affect both social policy and migration. In this case, development. So, of course, I capture development in GDP per capita, GDP growth, and other things, but there is still likely some factors that I cannot capture in the model, which affects both social policy and migration. And the likely effect is that these factors, these development factors, affect both in the same direction. So there are different factors. If countries more developed, then normally there are higher migration rate for the developing countries, and also higher demand for welfare state. I mean, maybe some of you have heard Wagner's law. So if you're more developed, then the demand for public goods are higher. So these two things, especially the potential of upward overstating the effects of social policy on migration. So the estimations are done on three different components: education, health, social protection, and the general social policy. So if you just do simple regressions, then normally you have no effect, or positive but not significant. The problem with this ordinary least square traditional regressions are those two issues: those reverse causality and omitted variables that create this endogeneity problem. But this is another alternative estimation, so I'm not going to detail, but I'm not use log for this. only the level. So if we change, so there is a functional form problem in this, why we have a positive or non-significant effect. Because once we change the functional form to correct estimations, then we have the sign is correct with our hypothesis. So that's done. However, of course, there could still be an issue of this omitted variable bias things. So what I did is to try to capture the exogenous variations of the social policy that explain migration. So I used an instrumental variable strategy basically to try to find some factors that affect social policy but do not affect migration directly. And the effects of these factors are only through social policy. So I use political economy literature to try to identify potential factors that affect social policy but not directly affecting immigration. This is election year. This is based on the political business cycle literature, and IMF program is the existence of IMF program in the year based on the international political economy. We expect this to be purely exogenous. So there were no other explanatory variables here that affect this. Of course, for the election, in the instrumental variable model, I also add two additional explanatory variables. That is democracy, because only democratic countries have elections. And our sample are only developed countries. And second is the political system, parliamentary or presidential or semi-presidential, because in parliamentary system, actually, you can have elections anytime. It is endogenous to the political conditions of their country. So I add those two to really confirm the exogenity of this. Two variables. And of course, for the IMF program, I add GDP growth already, so that actually, because normally you have IMF programs if you're in crisis. Yeah. Okay. So once I try to do these instruments, try to capture the variations, then the direction, the reverse Wolverman effects are still there, as well as the significance level. This is for the general social policy is increasing. Of course, there are some additional statistical tests that are passed, meaning that our model is appropriate. I will not go into detail for the presentation. And then I disaggregate the into each component. For this, the results are weaker for education. Again, perhaps because education policy, education social spending, public education spending in developing countries are directed mostly on primary education. So it's not really the target for the potential migrants. Children don't really migrate. Children don't. And then this is for the health. And this is for the social protection. So basically, along the general social policy and the three components, we have a consistent evidence of reverse Wolverman effect once we correct for the correct estimations. So so the findings basically, in theory, we need to also look beyond income maximization as the motives of migration, as migration demand, but also look into risk minimization. And this is where social policy plays its role. And of course, there are many other potential policies or structural factors that affect risk minimization, but normally these are not really being discussed in literature. And of course, through the two mechanisms and the policy implications. So
I think you have read many papers that say that really say that development, well, the neoclassical, the old agreement is like, okay, you give lots of aids or help the development of the developing or less developed countries, and then the migration will stop or will diminish. But that's not really the case. So development will stop migration if it is not accompanied by risk minimization policies through, I argue here, a social policy, comprehensive, more comprehensive welfare policy in developing countries. Because more development only increases their capability to migrate. So that's why, okay, the more developed countries are, the higher the migration rates are. So with social policy, which minimize their risk profile, it could actually reduce the incentives for citizens of developing and less developed countries. So, but this, the kind of social policy that has to be that needs to be enacted really depends on the providing the right incentives. It is not universal. If social policies have higher income effects, for instance, unconditional cash transfers, then the income effect is larger, then it will likely to actually trigger migration aspiration more. However, if the substitution effect is larger, then okay, so I will stay in these countries, then yes, social policy is important, that reduces risk minimization, but only those that provide the right incentives, so that it can tweak the migration profile of the citizens in different countries. I think that's all from me. So if you have questions, I'll be happy to discuss.
Thank you.